Hey now. Welcome everybody to the latest episode of the Microsoft Networking Academy. I'm your host today, Jamie Schmidtke, Express Route Partners GBB here at Microsoft. Got our colleagues out there, Mikkel Reese, Brian Woodworth, and our friends from Zscaler, who we're going to be hearing later in the show. What we're going to go through real quick is kind of the normal mode of operation here. This is a publicly information call, so no NDA material is going to be spoken of on this call. So if you're looking for any sort of future roadmap discussions that might not be publicly released yet, reach out to us directly or your local Microsoft account team. We'll be able to get the answers for you that you need. Of course, the IM window is always open for all attendees to ask questions as we go along. We'll probably cultivate those and address them during our Q&A section at the end, and also be able to ask our partner presenter, Zscaler, any questions that are related to their portion of the presentation. As always, this presentation and the recording is going to be posted on Olivier's blog, on the Microsoft Network Academy blog, and also the sessions will be posted on our Channel 9 platform shortly after we finish this recording. So keep your eyes open for that. Just a real refresher on the way this call works. Most of you probably already know this, but we're on a four-week schedule where we flip-flop between two different sessions. We got the partner-focused sessions today, where we'll talk about some things on the networking space, and also I'll have our partner of the week, which is Zscaler again, presenting about their solutions within Azure, and then, of course, we'll do the Q&A. Next time we meet, which is going to be around the middle of December, just before the holiday season, we're going to go through a deep dive. So keep an eye on that agenda that's going to be posted on the Microsoft Networking Academy blog. We're in active discussions with members of the engineering team to put together some good content for you guys right before our holiday hiatus. And we'll see that around the middle of December. And of course, if you've got any questions around the schedules or content that you'd like to see, feel free to email this alias, gbb-anf@microsoft.com, and we'll be able to take a look at what you got, answer any questions you have, and then incorporate any feedback into future shows. So let's talk about the agenda today. We're going to do a little bit of a send-off to our friend Olivier. We'll go into detail what that's all about here in a second. We got some topics around ExpressRoute, kind of a little bit of a recap. We'll talk about some announcements that happened around the Ignite timeframe a couple months ago you may have heard about, and give some specifics and maybe bring some clarity around some potential nuances with the merging of the Azure public and the Microsoft peering. And then just a refresher around Office 365 and ExpressRoute, what we look for in customers that look to adopt that service, the steps, what you need to know about. And just a quick refresher there, and that's something that we've seen quite a bit out in the field lately, so it's always good to have a refresher on that thing every once in a while to make sure everyone's on the same page. In terms of the partner spotlight, said a number of times already, Zscaler. We made some big announcements with Zscaler at our Ignite conference. They got some great solutions to help optimize and make cloud adoption more readily available to a number of users, so they'll be going through their solution, some of the news that's broken recently with them and Microsoft. And of course, we always have that open Q&A at the end. So with a heavy heart, even though it's not necessarily a downer, but it's great for Olivier, but Olivier is off to greener pastures. He's taking a new role within the Microsoft Global Black Belt organization, looking after big compute, high performance computing, HPC, artificial intelligence, deep learning. This is something that Olivier has been striving for a long time now, and building up his skill set to be able to take not only from the networking background he has, but also from the analytics side too. So best of luck to him in his new role, and also he's a newly anointed father, so he's got a new addition to the family. He's actually taken some time off to be able to spend time with them and get started with his new bundle of joy. So congratulations to him on that. And of course, we're all indebted to his efforts over the past year or so around contributing to the networking community. So everything that Olivier has done around customer engagements, shows like this, blog posts, even stuff that most of the people externally don't see Olivier do from the day to day, and helping out our internal field teams and engineering teams is really invaluable to the networking community as a whole. So thank you for that. And you'll see some changes in Olivier's blog here in the near future. So here's a link to it. You'll be able to click this on the copy of the slide deck that we'll post on his blog, and be able to see some of the updates to some of the new earth-breaking type stuff that he's going to be working on here in the near future in his new role. So bon voyage, Olivier. We'll still keep in touch, and hopefully we'll have you back on as a guest speaker on some of the things that you'll be working on here in the near future. So see you in 2018 once you get back from your parental leave. So getting into the topics, just a little refresher on ExpressRoute. So as most of you may know, ExpressRoute is our private connectivity offer for Microsoft Cloud Services. It's something that customers can leverage their existing MPLS connections to communicate with the Microsoft Cloud. And also, we've got this large partner ecosystem that we'll talk about here in a second. But the key message here that I see in discussions with customers is there's always this type of trend around thinking that there's a connection that you're getting directly to a Microsoft data center. And actually, what you're doing is connecting to Microsoft's global backbone network. So it's a little bit different than maybe what you're accustomed to in like either co-location or other cloud providers, where you're connecting to a specific site for a reason. This solution is a cloud-based service that connects to our global backbone network and be able to route traffic to either a data center within your geographic area, or with the premium add-on, which we'll talk about here in a second, anything globally. So just to hammer off on this slide, which a number of you have probably seen or seen on our documentation page, we've got three routing domains or peerings over ExpressRoute. The one across the bottom is for infrastructure services like virtual machines or virtual networks, and that's called the Azure Private Peering. The middle one here, which is a topic of conversation on this show, the Azure Public Peering, has traditionally been used for platform-based services like blob storage, SQL Azure, machine learning, those Azure services that are operated over a public IP address. And then we've got the Microsoft peering on the top here, which has traditionally been for Office 365 and Dynamics CRM Online, or Dynamics 365 for customer engagement. So just a quick refresher on this. Want to kind of tease up some of the discussions we're going to be having here later in the show. So just want to make sure everyone's aware of that. Now, in terms of ExpressRoute locations, remember, these are your entry points into the Microsoft Global Backbone Network from a private perspective. So as you can see, we've got a lot of great coverage across the United States. We've also got high density coverage in Europe, and also we're constantly building out connectivity out of Asia Pac. We're expanding our connectivity. We've got a couple new Azure regions down in South Africa, so we're enabling ExpressRoute locations down there in Joburg and Cape Town, and of course in southern France and Marseille to help support the Azure regions that are based in France. So pretty much anywhere you go in the world now, you have access to our carrier partner networks, and be able to get connectivity out of any one of these locations to get through to the Microsoft Global Backbone Network. And to that point, one thing that a lot of customers sometimes get confused about is, what does that exactly mean? I'm connecting to Microsoft's global backbone network. So with ExpressRoute in particular, it means really two things. One, we've got a standard circuit and a premium circuit. So the standard circuit allows you to connect to any of those locations within a geopolitical area in any of the Azure regions that are in that area. So for example, if you connect in through Washington, D.C., you could communicate with US East or US West, West 2, West Central, or even Canada Central, Canada East, any of the data center regions in North America. The same thing goes for Europe. So with a standard circuit, you connect in through London, you could get access to data centers in Amsterdam or France or Ireland, for example. And then so on in Asia as well. So even if you connect in through Sydney, you can still get access to a data center region that's based in Singapore, and then in South America as well. So that's how the standard circuit works. Now, with the premium add-on, that gives you the global routing tables. So those global routing tables will allow you to connect in through somewhere like Washington, D.C., to maybe an Azure region in Europe, to be able to get those prefixes there. So that allows you to really create this, distributed, cloud environment across the world and leverage Microsoft's investments in the global backbone network to be able to create that interconnectivity for you. And if we look at a couple of different locations here, we've got our commercial locations with Espresso, which you just talked about, but also our national clouds. And of course, we got the United States government cloud here with a couple of new locations coming up soon in Phoenix and San Antonio. We've got the Germany cloud, which is isolated within Germany. So these connections in Berlin or Frankfurt are only for German-based data centers. They can't connect to Azure regions outside of Germany. And the same thing goes for China. So Beijing and Shanghai, those ExpressRoute connections can only access those regions in China. So these are kind of isolated, what we call national clouds. Same thing goes for U.S. government. So even though you might have a commercial ExpressRoute location in Washington, D.C., if you're a government-based customer and needed connectivity to Azure government in, let's say, the East Coast in Virginia, then you'll have to get a separate ExpressRoute circuit to be able to communicate with that because it's completely isolated. So big news here around San Antonio and Phoenix coming up soon. So we'll have great coverage in the United States. And then obviously complete coverage in both China and Germany. And our partner ecosystem is something we've been working, pretty feverishly here at Microsoft and, expanding the breadth of our ecosystem to create reach with our customer community. So a number of logos that you see here have joined the program. They've been around for a little while or they've just recently joined. It's something that we're pretty proud of, the partnerships across the board here. And even if you don't see your carrier's logo on this page, there's still an opportunity for them to, interconnect to us through one of our exchange or aggregation partners, folks like Equinix, CoreSite, Cologix, NextDC, Megaport, folks or IX Reach, those type of folks will be able to aggregate those connections into Microsoft if your local carrier isn't part of this program yet. And we're always willing to, expand this program. We're constantly adding new partnerships across the board. So if you're a customer that if you reach out to your local internet service provider or MPLS provider and ask for a private connectivity to Azure and maybe they haven't really been doing too much in that space, you could always reach out to me personally, JAIMESC@Microsoft.com, and get them signed up and aware of what offering private connectivity from Microsoft to customers is all about. So the peering merge. So kind of going back to this slide real quick. As we talked about earlier, we've got three pairings over ExpressRoute: Azure Private, Azure Public, and Microsoft pairing. What we're actually doing is merging Azure Public and Microsoft pairing. So this is something that was announced at Ignite a couple months ago. A couple of things that want to make sure customers are aware of. One is around the Office 365 approval process. So the approval process used to be at the peering level, right? So customers weren't actually allowed to enable Microsoft peering at all unless they went through that approval process with their Microsoft account team, which we'll go through here in a little bit. But now with the new Microsoft peering, as you see here, we've got this thing called route filters. So these route filters are essentially the next iteration of BGP communities, which we've had for a little while now. But instead of advertising these prefixes down to the customer network and having the customer be responsible for filtering, different services or Azure regions based on community values, we're actually doing that on the Azure side now. So that's something that we'll talk about here in a little bit of what that looks like. But you're able to now select either Office 365 or Dynamics CRM Online prefixes or Azure regions like US East, East 2, West, whatever. So that's a little bit different than what we've done in the past. So now with this approval process for Office, it's moved at the peering level down to the route filter level, which we'll go a little bit more in depth here in a second. A couple other things to talk about: IPv6 support for Microsoft peering. You're able to leverage IPv6 address space to be able to communicate with these platform services or Office 365. And then we're making big investments, as you saw in our last episode, with Paresh and our engineering team around monitoring and the network performance monitor solution out there. So again, if you haven't seen that episode yet, go back to our Channel 9 page, check that out, and get an in-depth tutorial and demo around what the monitoring looks like over these type of connections using ExpressRoute. So route filters, we'll go a little bit more in depth here on route filters. So we're selecting services over routes, which of course would reduce the amount of prefixes initially advertised down to you as a customer. So this is something that is strictly for Microsoft peering. And when you go into your Azure portal, you'll go into the route filter section, and you'll create this route filter where you'll add a couple bits of information, the subscription that you're looking for, and of course, the location here. Sometimes even with ExpressRoute gets a little bit confusing on what that exactly means. It's basically where the configuration is stored for this route filter. So typically, if you have all your Azure resources in a given location, you might as well select that one. But there's really no impact to you in which Azure region that you select for this configuration. So any subscription can create this today. This is available today. This is something that we announced at Ignite. We still need the approval for the Office 365 prefixes, as I mentioned, but we do not need approval for any Azure or Dynamics 365 prefixes. So that's something that's new in terms of the approval process for Dynamics. So if you're looking at leveraging Dynamics CRM Online or Dynamics AX, which is Dynamics 365 Operations Management, that's where you would select those prefixes to be able to get access to those resources and not have to go through that approval process. So the steps that you would do is first, as I was saying earlier, go through this route filter configuration within your Azure portal, and then you'll be able to manage these rules. So as you can see here, some of these things might look familiar to you if you looked at the BGP community values that we have in our documentation side, because these are exactly what's going to be listed here. So you'll be able to select either an Office-based service if you get approval or any of the Azure regions. And then also assigning that to a particular ExpressRoute circuit would be the next step in making sure that you're going to be get these route advertisements down to your network over ExpressRoute. So once that's done, we're going to take a look at what ExpressRoute for Office 365 is all about. So here's a quick topology of what it looks like when you implement ExpressRoute, and of course this is very basic. And for a lot of customers, especially global customers, we've got a number of different ExpressRoute locations that are at play. But kind of as a high-level overview, we have this private connection across the bottom here with ExpressRoute. We've got still the connectivity for public internet, so things like DNS, our geolocation DNS service, and also our content delivery networking. Connectivity is still based over the internet and does not go over ExpressRoute, and that's kind of where we get into potential issues around asymmetric routing. But this is kind of the bare bones, eagle eye look of what ExpressRoute for Office 365 looks like in terms of a traffic pattern. Now let's talk about quickly the pros. The pros when using ExpressRoute for Office 365, of course, predictable performance. An SLA for availability. We typically see customers implement multiple ExpressRoute locations for Office 365 if you get approval for that. And you're able to have that payload traffic, whether it's Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, go over this private connection. Some of that traffic will still go over the internet for things like DNS queries and CDN content. We've got QoS capabilities specifically for Skype for Business. That's the only QoS markings that we have, and our documentation page kind of outlines what those specific values are. But that's the only tags that we actually will honor over ExpressRoute, regardless of which peering you have. It's only for Skype for Business. And some customers have a regulatory, or if you're in government, a statutory requirement for this type of connectivity. So some of the cons, and this is based on a lot of our experiences over the last couple of years in helping customers through this. We still need a reliable internet connection. Even if you got ExpressRoute from an availability perspective, if your internet connection goes down, you can't resolve outlook.office365.com, you're going to be down. So making sure you still have reliable internet connectivity is still important. In a lot of cases for customers, the performance thing, and this kind of goes to a lot of those assumptions that are made around ExpressRoute for Office 365. I'd like to tell customers that the typical assumptions you make for private networking that have held true for decades don't always apply to Office 365, as weird as that may sound. And the second bullet around, good internet connectivity may give similar or better performance is certainly true, because the next bullet outlines why. when implementing ExpressRoute for Office 365, you're actually seeing a number of specific paths that your traffic could take. So that could actually be further away from you than your local internet egress's peering point with Microsoft's global backbone network. So that's one thing. That's takes a little bit of time to go through the planning process. It's not just a trivial, configuration issue, and you also need to do some pretty in-depth analysis of what your internal network looks like, because there's a lot of different components internally, both from infrastructure and a network segment side of things that you need to look at to make sure that you're going to put yourself in the best position to succeed and not cause yourself an outage. Another thing around the private networking space is the security aspect of it. With ExpressRoute compared to your internet connection, you're using the same edge servers, the same encryption technology, pretty much all the same security mechanisms that are built into the Office 365 platform, regardless of which connectivity method you use. So you might not necessarily be getting the perceived enhanced security that you might think you're getting. So that's something to pay attention to too. And at the end of the day, we've seen a lot of customers actually look at what the level of effort is and made the right decision based on their specific needs, whether they should stick with their existing internet topology or modify that or expand the bandwidth on their internet circuits instead of going through this private connectivity solution. So in terms of next steps, what you would need to do is, one, engage your Microsoft account team. You might get discussions with your partner, connectivity partners, these network service providers. But at the end of the day, you need to engage your Microsoft account team, because what they're going to be able to do is, one, review the pros and cons for your environment to make sure that you're in the best position to succeed. And really, ExpressRoute is just another tool in the tool belt, right? If there's specific compliance or regulatory requirements or Skype performance issues or some other unique situation that maybe we've only seen once or twice, or frankly, maybe you've never seen at all, we'll be able to review that with you and then make sure that we're putting together the right plan. From a implementation plan side of things, we've got this guidance that the Office team put together that's on this aka.ms link that goes through all the different things you need to look at and all the different steps you need to follow, and it's pretty in-depth. So if you're considering this or thinking that it's something that you want to investigate, and if there's benefit to your organization for Office on ExpressRoute, then take a look at this site. You'll be able to get detailed information on what the level of effort is. So once you engage that Microsoft account team and do your due diligence ahead of time, if we find a reason to be able to move forward, the account team will petition the Office product group for that approval. And assuming the approval will be granted and we've done our due diligence, the Office product group will whitelist that Azure subscription into which the ExpressRoute connection will be created. And then any ExpressRoute circuit on that subscription will be able to create not only Microsoft peering, which you could do today without approval, but get those route filters that we just talked about for any of the Office services that you need advertised into your network. So just real quick, a simple, straightforward refresh on what we need to do when looking at ExpressRoute for Office 365. Anything with Azure, very straightforward. No approvals needed. Work with your carrier partners and, of course, folks like myself to be able to get you that private connectivity for Azure. And then if there's any sort of need for Office 365 to go over ExpressRoute, let's have that discussion along with your Microsoft account team to see if that makes sense. So what I'm going to do now is hand it over to our partner spotlight. So we've got Patrick and Chris from Zscaler. They'll be talking about their solution and some of the partner news out there. So Patrick, Chris, I'll hand it over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jamie. First off, I want to say thank you to the Azure networking team for inviting us to be part of this series. We appreciate that. I'm Chris Hines. I'm the senior manager here at Zscaler for our Zscaler Private Access solution. And I'm joined today with Patrick Foxhoven, who's our CIO. So Patrick, thanks for joining as well.
Thanks, Chris.
Today, what we want to do is talk about a solution that we've developed and partnered with Azure with. It's called Zscaler Private Access for Azure, and how it helps accelerate that cloud migration to Azure and simplify that, limiting some of the complexity. We'll talk about how it provides improves the remote access, the remote user experience itself. It helps simplify to actually help accelerate the migration to Azure, and how you can how it basically complements Azure Express Route as well and helps optimize some of that bandwidth use. So for those of you who are a little less familiar with who Zscaler is, I just wanted to kind of do a quick kind of overview of what the company does. Right, we are a cloud security platform. We protect outbound traffic going up to SaaS applications like Office 365 or Salesforce or CNN.com, for instance, being just the World Wide Web itself, as well as inbound traffic coming to internal or privately managed applications as well. And now, today we do about 35 billion daily requests. We're spread globally across about 100 different data centers. We're in over 180 countries themselves. As you can see, a list of enterprise customers. And one of the things we're really, really proud about is being a partner of Microsoft itself. And as Jamie touched on earlier in the presentation, we had some really awesome announcements at Microsoft Ignite earlier this year. We were able to take place in one of Youssef's breakout sessions as well. We talked about Azure networking and really how together Zscaler and Azure can really, with Zia, via ZPA for Azure, can actually simplify that journey to Azure itself, which is really, really special. And what I want to talk to you about today is really how transformation has affected remote access. Right, today, we have applications that once ran solely in the data center are now being migrated to Azure. Right, so that typical kind of secure perimeter, right, that crunchy outside perimeter of the past is no longer effective. Also, we talked about this kind of hub and spoke model as well, which as we've seen, people have started to move away from, given the fact that now remote users have moved off the network. And some of the interesting reports we've seen today is we've seen this massive influx, right, to enterprises actually looking to run applications within Azure itself, which is, of course, why we're excited to partner with them. The issue that we've seen today is that legacy remote access technologies, things like the remote access VPN, are being retrofitted, even though applications have moved to the cloud and more remote users are actually accessing them from off the network. As you know, the remote access VPN was really created within the 1990s, right? And the whole goal of that was to extend the network itself to the remote user. And some of the key challenges of that, and we'll kind of walk through that workflow in a second, is really it lacks this cloud-like experience, right? You go to the cloud for the simplicity, for its scalability, for its agility. But from a user experience, it really provides quite a poor user experience if you're looking at a remote access VPN. It could also take quite a bit of time to actually implement, right? Given the fact that it's reliant on more appliances. So you have to purchase them, deploy them, scale them. And you look at if you have multiple data centers, scaling that could potentially get quite expensive. And of course, the big thing is you're looking at connecting users and placing them on the actual network itself, which exposes your network to risk. And any malware or anything that's on these mobile devices can then be brought into your network, and lateral access makes it an even larger attack surface when you look at it from a security standpoint. So let's take a look at what that really the user experience looks like. So I'm a remote user. I'm looking to access a private application located in Azure. If I'm using a remote access VPN, you can see how convoluted that process can be. Right, I have to traverse a VPN gateway that's hosted in a data center, right? There's the global load balancer. I might have my DDoS. I might have an internal as well as an external firewall as well as load balancing. But that user experience is the thing that's really affected, right? I have to then route my remote traffic to a remote data center location, have it traverse an extra a site-to-site, and then to access Microsoft Azure. Our goal is to simplify that, right? Because when you leverage a technology like this that was really retrofitted, and for a new age use case, you really run into complexity, right? Things like network complexity. Now I have to actually set up the time to segment based on networks versus applications themselves. I have to deal with the security complexity of how do I give users access to my applications, but while at the same time considering I have to place them on my network. I have to go through the point of actually exposing the network to some potential risk. All right, so our goal is to improve this this workflow as we look at, from a remote access user standpoint, connecting to an application that's now been migrated to Azure. Because this is what the remote user experience looks like today. And I'm sure folks in the audience who have used a remote access VPN, we've all been there, right? The key things that are really taking place is that there's this transformation taking place within the enterprise. And because of this transformation, it's actually forced this remote access technology to evolve. Right? So there's really three core areas that we talk about when we look at transformation. Right? You have where the application itself is running. In a world, in the past, it ran solely in the data center. Today, we're seeing applications that are being migrated to cloud, whether it be via containers or you name it. Right now, they're running in Azure. From a network standpoint, we initially had this traditional hub and spoke model, where you had remote office, you had a main headquarters, you have branch office locations, and you basically backhauled all your traffic back to a central location. Today, that's changed. Now we have solutions that can provide a direct route to access the cloud itself without placing users on the network. From a security standpoint, we moved away from this traditional castle and moat architecture where you needed kind of like a drawbridge or a gateway to enable people to actually, that being a remote access VPN, to allow them to access applications or assets within your actual data center itself. Today, we have the ability to leverage policies based on specific users and specific apps to determine which users should be able to access privately managed applications today that are running in Azure. So we talked about that user experience in the past. Today we say, let's simplify that use case for the user experience for the user, right? Let's make it a faster user experience. Let's make it more simple, and let's find a way to make it even more secure so that users, remote users, can go directly to the Azure itself to access their applications, which increases their productivity as a whole. So what I want to do now is transition over to our CIO, Patrick Foxhoven, to talk a little bit more about Zscaler Private Access for Azure.
Thanks, Chris. So let me walk you through a little bit more depth exactly how it is we're doing this, and take you actually down to the networking perspective and explain what we're doing. So as an intro, we started building this technology almost 4 years ago now. It was a huge amount of R&D that went into it because we didn't just want to build a traditional IPsec or SSL based tunnel or VPN out and call it done. We could have done that the same way everyone's been doing it for the last, like Chris mentioned, 15, 20 years in terms of how remote access is done. But we wanted to take it a step further, both from a security perspective as well as from a lot of the end user experience perspective that Chris was highlighting. So to do that, we kind of came up with, from a design perspective, or when you're designing the architecture, there were four things that we wanted to do that were pretty, I think today, even pretty differentiated in terms of how remote access or application access is done. And so they start with one. The first notion is we want to be able to connect users to applications without ever them bringing them on the network. The network that they're accessing to or from shouldn't really matter. And taking that a step deeper, that means things like IP addresses shouldn't matter. Why do IP addresses matter in a world where you've moved an application out to Azure and a user is going to be connecting to it from anywhere? You shouldn't have to put a user on that remote network and give them a RFC 1918 IP address, and none of that should even matter when you're just needing to give them access to those applications. Plus, when you actually connect users to those networks, that's obviously from a security perspective a huge risk. We've all seen what happens when a compromised user is connecting via a VPN and having malicious activity spread laterally as a result of them making that connection. So we wanted to reduce the risk there as well. The second point is, and this is really important why we call it private access, is applications that you migrate out that are not meant to be, exposed to the public internet. So we're not talking about, public-facing websites and public content. We're talking about private applications that are usually very business sensitive. These are things, anything from SAP to, internal web apps that have been developed to, whatever they may be. When they're meant to be private, meaning only to, your own employees, you should never have to expose anything to the internet. And this was something that we spent a lot of time working on, which is how to figure out how can we still provide this kind of connectivity without literally having a single inbound firewall policy or ACL, not from us, not to the user, no one. In essence, the deployment can be completely dark. You don't need a single inbound connection required from the internet. And obviously, if from a security perspective, that dramatically increases the security of the solution, because you can't attack what you don't see. And so I'll walk you through how we're doing that. That's kind of a bold claim, but I'll show you what we're doing there. Three, and Chris talked about this a little bit, is a lot of organizations want to be able to segment their user and app traffic without having to forklift and segment the whole network. That is a very daunting challenge in a corporate network environment, where you're actually creating true network segmentation all the way between users and applications. And it's also, not really possible as you're talking about users when they're remote or in uncontrolled network scenarios. And then the last piece is, obviously, everyone wants to use the internet. We think the internet is obviously becoming more and more the corporate network now, and they want to use it without having to sacrifice some trust, and without having to deploy appliances and additional hardware, software to make this all work. So that's a high level. These four design tenets, and you'll see it drove what it is that we built and basically how it works. So let me skip. Advance forward and walk you through at a high level what we're doing. And off to the right is just a very high level network diagram that kind of shows the major elements that are at play here. And I know we'll have some time at the end for Q&A if I don't cover everything, because the industry is starting to call a solution that this is playing in. The name for the space is becoming, I think the name that'll be accepted is a software-defined perimeter. This is a software-defined perimeter, but we took it much further than what is out there today. So basically, if I walk you through the elements on the right, and then I'll detail what we're doing. We've got in the middle is our global security cloud. You'll see in a few slides it is running within Azure. So traffic that's going to Azure is actually staying within Azure, which I think is important from a networking perspective. Basically, in our cloud platform, we have this a component called brokers, or Zscaler brokers. And I'll walk you through what they're doing in a moment. Above the broker is the connector. This is basically a lightweight, it's in the Azure marketplace. You can one-click install it. We actually distribute it in the form of a software package as well. So it can be an RPM that you load in Linux. It can be actually an off-prem, VM that you would run within your corporate network outside the cloud as well, because this can stitch together cloud and non-cloud enabled apps, so it can talk traditional applications that are in your own data center too. It comes in a variety of different form factors. It's very lightweight. You basically run it next to wherever you have applications. I'll go a little bit deeper there in a moment. And then at the bottom, the Zscaler app. This is the Zscaler agent that goes on. It's of course on Windows. It's on Mac. It's on iOS. It's on Android. So it is a unified app that runs across all the major platforms. At the bottom. And basically what happens is when a user tries to access an application that is in essence going through Zscaler private access, what we're going to be doing is intercepting that request to that application, and I'll walk through how we're doing that. So whatever, and it could be if it's going to a DNS name or if it's going to an IP address, it doesn't matter. We're going to intercept that request. We're going to signal to the connector that's running within the Azure deployment or wherever the connectors are running, we're going to signal to them to create a new outbound connection, and we're going to create what we call a micro tunnel. So basically it's an ephemeral tunnel that comes up just for that user, just for that application at that time, and that we basically signal both ends to create a new outbound connection and basically have it meet in the middle of our cloud, in essence where the brokers are. That's why we call them brokers. Think of them like traffic brokers. And we're basically dynamically stitching together those outbound connections. And technically speaking, we're acting as a forward and reverse proxy in one, meaning we take that outbound connection from the app and the outbound connection from the connector, and then we're forward and reverse proxying them. So there's extreme segmentation. We don't expose anything even down to the IP addresses. Users never even see the actual IP address of the app that they're connecting to. These brokers are the way we do the traffic distribution. We're going to select the closest place that's optimal for them to meet, and we do that dynamically. If you have more than enough traffic that one connector can have, all you have to do is turn on a second. You can even auto-scale them and have them come up and down elastically. You don't need to deploy any kind of load balancing locally or globally to make any of this work. All of that is part of our cloud platform and the intelligence of what we built. And just think of it as the next generation way of thinking about how to give users access to applications with some networking magic that actually makes this happen without ever having an inbound firewall policy being required, without ever having to extend that network perimeter. And last but not least, this is not just for web applications. A lot of SDP solutions today are just talking about glorified web access. We have this working with basically any port or protocol. So legacy client server apps all work still quite well as well through this solution. And then the last piece that I didn't highlight and Chris mentioned, Azure Express Route off to the right, that is still very much in play. This can often be thought of as a remote access solution that complements what Express Routes is doing. That's one scenario. There's also others that can come up if we want to go deeper in the Q&A. And so how do we accomplish those four tenets in what I just described on, you know, talking about whatever application you may have moved out to Azure? So we're never putting the user on the remote network. In fact, when we intercept that traffic, we resolve it to a fictitious IP address that's not real. And so the app and then everything on the client device is still thinking that it's talking to something normally, but it's not never the actual IP address. And that's just showing how extremely segmented this kind of communication is. The applications are completely invisible. They never even resolve via DNS unless the user has been fully authorized, which is something very different. You know, it's a lot in normal use cases, the application will resolve via DNS and then authorization will happen. We've kind of done a 180 on that. They don't even resolve. And talking about people from outside outside your organization, you know, it's completely dark. Again, you can't attack what you can't see. Our policy engine in the middle is very dynamic. It's very granular around which users or groups of users are allowed to go to which apps, you know, and that can be dependent on the device location and the posture of the device. And it's very rich and granular in terms of how you're providing the access. And then the last piece is, and I didn't highlight this on the prior diagram because there's a lot of new notions being introduced, but there's one other really important part to this equation, which is, you know, if I were in your shoes, I would never want to trust a third party with visibility to some of my most sensitive traffic flows in my environment. And so we actually have the ability to do a bring your own key encryption model here, where basically you deploy your own keys to the user's device and you deploy your own keys to the connectors and you never give us the private key. So we can do all this connectivity stitching and brokering and tunneling without ever having the private keys. And so it very much is a trust no one encryption model. And that's how we've been deployed in some of the most sensitive environments that exist. I also mentioned we're running on Azure today, and we're doing that in multiple ways. So our traffic brokers are now, we launched at Ignite, running in the Azure infrastructure, which is important from a performance and quality of service, and it keeps that traffic within Azure, which is, I think any networking engineer would agree, is great. We have already been integrated with Azure Active Directory, so you'll see us in that marketplace as well, and we have lots of further integrations coming, including EMS. I think just a slide to highlight some of the benefits of what it is that we're doing. Obviously, this provides a great end-user experience. In fact, when we get deployed in environments and the users just access applications using the normal names that they would, and they just always work, whether they're on the network, off the network, wherever they are, it just always works. That ends up being a pretty game-changing experience. And we're doing that in a much more secure way because of some of the concepts that I highlighted from a networking perspective. It's also extremely simple. So here's a screenshot of us running in the marketplaces that I mentioned. So whether it's Azure or deploying those connectors right into your environments, we're there and fully supported. And when I mention it's simple, you know, a typical customer can be deployed in this solution in well less than 2 hours, usually sometimes even less than an hour. And basically, the deployment steps are very simple. The two most important things you do is you configure how we're going to authenticate your users. Obviously, that's very simple if it's Azure AD, or it also works with obviously on-prem AD and ADFS. Basically, we talk SAML, and that's how we're going to authenticate the end users. Two, you deploy the connectors in your environment, put them right next to wherever your applications are. Three, you install the app, and that app can be manually or self-installed by the end user, or it can be rolled out as part of GPO updates or other software distribution or Intune or MDMs, and that's it. That's all that ends up being required. We actually have capability to auto-discover applications to help you with the policies if needed. And it's very straightforward. That's what a cloud solution should be. And so that's how we've accomplished those four objectives. And I think with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Chris and Jamie. And thank you.
Cool. Awesome, Patrick and Chris. Great stuff from the NetScaler folks. You know, made some big announcements at our Ignite conference around the partnership there. And, you know, we're going to continue to work closely together with our friends from Zscaler. So it's a really impressive stuff to, you know, help customers adopt cloud connectivity solutions. So with that, we've got a number of questions, Patrick and Chris, coming through. If I go back to this slide here. The first comes from Brian. Are your tunnels IPsec, TLS, or both?
Yeah, I can take that one. So the actual tunnels that we use are TLS, and it's a proprietary format. We actually publish it. You can see the spec of it, but it is optimized for the exact kind of traffic patterns that we're doing. So we basically purpose built a tunnel that is meant for this style connectivity. Basically everything is wrapped within a TLS connection. So the only communication that's needed is an outbound, TCP 443 connection, and that's it. And again, because it's purpose built, using something like IPsec for user to application access, we looked at it, but it didn't make a lot of sense because IPsec was originally meant to, connect two networks together. And obviously there's on mobile devices and other environments, there's concerns like battery life and, whether it's optimized enough from a performance perspective and what devices support what kind of crypto libraries and how optimized those are. We purposely decided to build a much simpler implementation. When we run on mobile devices, you will see, because they have VPN libraries. So for example, if we're running on an iOS device, we will look like an IPsec connection, but the actual transport is just a Zscaler simple TLS protocol. That's everything's just going over port 443.
Awesome. Now Brian has another one here. Can users configure their tunnel encryption parameters or ciphers, or is this opaque?
It's completely opaque to the end user. In essence, because we control both ends of the connection, we control the app on the user's device and then the connector on the other end. There's no reason to downgrade that from a security perspective or, compromise how strong the negotiation or what the algorithms or ciphers are. And so that's very strongly controlled and always enforced. In fact, certificates are even pinned in that equation. So we take it even a step further than what you may be used to doing. Configuring an IPsec tunnel manually between two endpoints.
Gotcha. Great. Next one's from Steve. He sees Zscaler creates a VM in Azure, three sizes based on throughput, he's assuming. But it has a public IP address. So I suppose you recommend a firewall in front of it. Is that a typical topology you guys see?
Yeah, they don't need to. They actually don't need a pub. They have to have an IP address to go out to the internet, obviously. But they don't have to have any inbound firewall policies whatsoever. I would absolutely recommend deploying those in a location where you don't need to expose them to the internet at all.
Perfect. And Steve's got another one. HA, having two Zscaler VMs, so we've got that capability now for people that don't know. We have high availability capabilities through our network interface cards on virtual machines, which is allowing our network appliance vendors to take advantage of that, to have multiple instances become HA aware. Patrick or Chris, if you could comment on what Zscaler is doing on that front, if it applies.
I'm assuming that was targeted towards the connectors and how you make them highly available. So if you... You can absolutely deploy more than one connector. You can deploy them in multiple availability sets or zones or across different regions. You don't have to worry about anything from a network perspective around them to make HA work or to make traffic distribution work. So basically, think of on our side, when we're choosing how to broker a connection, we're going to intelligently We know, hey, there's five connectors running within this region. They can all five see the application that's running. We're going to automatically distribute traffic among them. And if that pool of five reduces to, say, four, we're going to automatically reroute those traffic among, you know, the new pool of four. So that's all built into the solution. So from your perspective, the only thing you need to do is, from a sizing or availability perspective, you just need to worry about how much traffic, raw traffic, is going through one connector, and we publish specs on that. That's why there's different sizes depending on, you know, how much expense you want to have with the VM running. And that's it. If you need more performance, turn on a second connector. If you want high availability, in fact, we always recommend deploying a minimum of two anywhere you're deploying a connector. They're gonna do HA inherently based on basically the control channel that they have back to our cloud. We're going to be distributing traffic automatically in an HA fashion.
Perfect.
And one thing I wanted to add about the connector, especially when you look at a migration to Azure. Right. Let's say you had an application running in the data center. It's routed. So basically, you would be routing traffic to a specific connector. Once you migrate that app from the data center to Azure, right, and you have a connector already running in front of the app in Azure, all you do is just route that traffic to that new connector. That's how simple the migration becomes. And that's what we talk about, limiting some of that complexity of and accelerating the migration to Azure itself.
Awesome. And kind of in the same line of thought around HA, Daniel asks if the Zscaler VMs can be placed in availability sets, and Steve says he could see that in the Azure portal now. Could you guys comment on that a little bit?
Yeah. I didn't see where that question was going all the way, but the short answer is yes, they can. They're very flexible in terms of how you deploy them. It's up to whatever use case you want. Just think of it as a traditional VM, and it's going to have an outbound control connection to our cloud, and they're going to self load balance or direct traffic and fail over among each other automatically, and so you can deploy those in availability sets. Absolutely.
Perfect. And you guys have supportability for Azure Government Cloud.
So we are as a company, Zscaler's FedRAMP pending. So as a part of our FedRAMP initiative, and that's with a partnership with Microsoft, we're going to be there very early next year. I know we weren't getting into roadmap, but short answer is no, not yet, but very imminent.
All right. We got one other question here, which I'm going to unmute this person referred to as Caller One. So Caller One, I just unmuted you. If you could pose your question to the Zscaler folks around, CASB solutions, that'd be great. Caller One, you out there? All right, Caller One's out. So I don't know if you guys could comment on that. I'm not exactly clear on what the question. The Caller One person says, any impact if we use CASB solution? I'm not clear.
I think they're asking, can Zscaler coexist with all the CASBs, basically?
Okay.
Yeah, so short answer is yes. What we're talking about here with our Zscaler private access offering, normally this would just be user internal or private applications, which would not be I typically think of the CASB market. I'm thinking of, you know, public SaaS applications or internet facing apps. And by definition, then that wouldn't be private. So that wouldn't likely be going through our Zscaler private access offering, but it would be going through potentially our Zscaler internet access offering, which we didn't cover today. And the short answer is yes, we can coexist there quite well. In fact, we have strong partnerships with the CASB vendors, including obviously Microsoft.
Perfect. Cool. That seems to be it for the Q&A side. Pricing, another.
There is one more, actually, Jamie. So Caller One posted another one with regards to support for AWS and Google as well. I think that's the last one. And pricing.
Yeah, and pricing. So Patrick or Chris, you could tackle both of those. It'd be great.
I can take the AWS Google, and then Chris, if you want to tackle how it's priced, that'd
absolutely
be great. So short answer, yes, we can run in just about any environment because because the form factor of the connector is very lightweight and hardware agnostic, it's a VM, obviously. We have already published images in other cloud providers. Obviously, with Azure, the benefit is we're actually in the marketplace, and it's, you know, one-click deployment and a much tighter integration. But you can literally take a software package even from us. It can be an RPM that you install and send to us on your own. You can run it on, you know, any Linux machine as well. So it's meant to be able to run just about anywhere.
And as far as pricing goes, there's three different bundles of Zscaler Private Access. So there's professional, business, and enterprise. Those are kind of, as you increase, you get more features and availability and connectors and things like that as well. So happy to discuss that offline.
Perfect. Alrighty. So I think we're going to wrap things up. We're approaching the top of the hour. So I want to thank everybody for joining. Again, the materials and the recording is going to be posted on the Microsoft Networking Academy blog and also on our Channel 9 platform. Keep your eyes out for the agenda for our next episode sometime in mid-December, right before the holiday break. And appreciate the time. Thanks to our friends from Zscaler, and have a great weekend. Thanks.